shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
And he pulled his pants down?
Well, it doesn't really matter. I'm not going to do it anyway.
If we've learned anything from this tragedy,
it's hard when you're trying to do the right thing, you know, because a trip to the CVS.
I'm Fred Thompson, and I approve this message.
And he pulled his pants down?
World famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, knows where it's going because it knows where it's been, and that's where I'm at. Yes, we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't. This is the future. This is the past. And this is the present of talk radio. Why are conservatives backing Ricky Gervais? Ricky Gervais, the great comic who performed at the Golden Globes. Why are conservatives backing him? Also, the city of Berkeley will offer employees sex change health care benefits. Plus, one of the most bizarre 911 calls that you may ever hear coming up tonight. We also have Dave Oliva joining us. Dave is a prospective LAPD officer, takes criminal justice at L.A. Canyon College. He'll be up talking to us about the use and the more liberal and more frequent use of the taser and how it's saving lives. Also, Dr. Leo Ritenour joining us from Mobile, Alabama here in just a moment to talk about stem cells and how parents are having baby teeth extracted now from their children. And these teeth are then preserved so that the stem cells from them can be used somewhere down the road when medicine makes these advances, can be used to help cure that child once they're an adult of a variety of diseases. This is where stem cells are coming from now. And so the whole conversation, you know, about fetal stem cells, it's all moot. Now stem cells are coming from a lot of different parts of the body, and this particular area having to do with baby teeth. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, and our affiliate spotlight tonight on WTAR 850 AM in Norfolk, Virginia. And we've got a couple of new affiliates, WCIT 940 AM in Lima, Ohio, and WVOP 970 AM in Vidalia, Georgia. So we welcome you guys onto our network of great radio stations here, the Phil Hendry Show. And don't forget our website is philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. We put a note up this evening on the on what we hope will be the possible sale of our very limited number of 94 best of CDs. We also have other merchandise coming into our shop as well. So check out philhendryshow.com. Get your live streaming video of the show. It's happening right now online. 877-876-PHIL. And let me get here. Dr. Ritenour in Mobile, Alabama. Doctor, how are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me on.
And Doctor, the story here, parents pulling baby teeth out for stem cells. You're familiar with this, right?
Oh, yes, very much.
The tradition of letting baby teeth fall out naturally and keeping them for the tooth fairy may become a thing of the past, as the teeth are increasingly used as a source of something far more valuable than pocket change, stem cells.
Yes, that is absolutely correct. The stem cell therapy, in their early stages of development, and some families are having their children's baby teeth extracted and saved in anticipation of these treatments. And it's a great opportunity. The science is not yet 100%, but the science will be 100%, most likely when these children are adults. And then you're able to use the teeth, the stem cell material, which is generally from the pulp of the interior of the tooth, and you can use that, and you can tease that out and create any therapy that you want. We've got people now bringing the children in and having their teeth removed, and the teeth are then sent to a temperature-controlled steel container. And we send that to a lab in Massachusetts. The stem cells are spun out. They're frozen to more than 100 degrees below zero, and they're stored for any future illness.
And parents are coming in and having their children's baby teeth extracted for this reason.
Many parents are, and we certainly recommend it if any individual is curious to how they might help their young person long after you and I are here, Phil, how they might help a person survive a cancer or there's a provided therapy for something that might be wrong. Well, the stem cell research that's being done today, hopefully in 20 years or 15, 20, 30 years, is going to be far enough down the road that whatever therapy is needed to repair whatever injury illness or anything else that's wrong with the body, that therapy is going to be made available.
Now, there's a woman here, a lady by the name of Montoya. They just cited one lady, and she's in Miami. She says she believes in this. She brought her sons in, and they extracted these baby teeth, and I guess they took out a couple of teeth. Now, where are the stem cells taken from? In because, you know, we're used to baby teeth being put under the pillow, as I said at the beginning of the story, and having the tooth fairy get them. Which obviously is something that we do to just comfort our children. But now these teeth are in some cases, being shipped to these labs. What exactly? Tell me the procedure. Tell me the process.
Certainly, Phil. Well, the teeth are no longer considered dental waste. There are researchers are spitting out stem cells that we think can regrow lost teeth. They might even be used to repair damaged bones, hearts, pancreas, muscle, perhaps even neural tissue, and that would be tissue of the brain. We might as well use these teeth that have been this kind of dental waste. I can't help but feel excitement for the potential use in regenerating different tissues in the human body. There are some concerns. It does lead to a little bit of an expense, Phil, somewhere in the neighborhood of $500, $600 plus $100 to store the cells from up to four teeth for up to 20 years. It is very speculative, with the first FDA-approved practical use years away.
What is the National Institute of Health concluding about any of this, you know?
I think the NIH has concluded that 2003, the teeth are a rich source of stem cells. All right, and every child has about 20 baby teeth that fall out between the ages of 6 and 12. Now, allowing these teeth just to fall out is not good enough because the tooth then is dead. And you need a live tooth. You need a tooth that's relatively healthy because there's a blood supply going to that tooth. So that when you extract that tooth, it is a healthy tooth. It still has a blood supply keeping it healthy, and that's when it is frozen.
So just letting the tooth fall out, letting a baby tooth fall out as we used to, the tooth is not usable.
No, the stem cells, they are the body's repair system. They are beneath the skin. They're constantly spinning off new skin cells to replace the old sloughed-off skin. And the same is true for hearts and livers and so on. So stem cells from bone marrow, blood, and now perhaps teeth can be reprogrammed to help any of these organs that might be ailing. And so these stem cells also avoid embryonic stem cells. We don't have to use those.
And so it's the tooth, the pulp?
It is the blood supply, the nerve, and the actual tissue within the tooth, yes. The first practical use of dental stem cells. And I'm hoping, of course, after my review...
And we're talking here, and by the way, I want to get into that. We're talking with Dr. Leo Ritenour. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. Dr. Ritenour is with us and talking to us about stem cell, the use of stem cells from baby teeth that have to be extracted. So the child comes in, the tooth is a healthy tooth, it needs to be extracted. Now, you are under review right now. Why?
I'm under review because I made the blunder of telling someone I have a hypercondition where I enjoy removing a healthy tooth, and I'm going to be straight with you. I am not a person that wants to inflict pain. I'm not a person that gets any kind of a manic thrill from this. I just simply enjoy extracting a healthy tooth from a healthy jaw. And when that was communicated to one of my colleagues, I had a call from the Medical Review and Dental Review Board in the state of Alabama, and I was told that I was suspended pending an examination. And that was because I was being honest and saying that I enjoyed extracting a healthy tooth from a healthy jaw. Now,
you're saying that you don't get any there's no sadomasochism?
No, none at all. None at all. There's absolutely nothing sadistic about it. It is simply a condition whereby I achieve satisfaction. It's not sexual. It is satisfaction removing a healthy tooth from a healthy jaw. Now, my entire life, obviously, I've had to suppress that. Now comes a time in the history of dentistry where we are using baby teeth for stem cell research, and people are coming in to have those teeth removed, and I am not allowed to do that. So I'm filing my grievance. If I have to take the Dental Review Board to court, I will, because I am uniquely qualified for this procedure, Phil, and I'm not being allowed to conduct it.
When you say that you're uniquely qualified, we're talking here to Dr. Leo Rittenour, 877-876-PHIL, about removing baby teeth so these can be used for stem cells later on in the life of the individual. You're uniquely qualified. The doctors can remove teeth.
Absolutely.
But you're uniquely qualified because you enjoy it.
Yes, I enjoy it. I can't explain why I enjoy it, but because I enjoy it, I do it very well. I don't cause any pain because we use a pain suppressant, we use an anesthetic, but I am extremely thorough in extracting those teeth. I am energetic and interested in extracting these teeth from these jaws, and I do recommend it to parents that bring their children in.
And now, there's an area there. You recommend it. Are you saying to these parents, let's take the baby teeth out of this child's jaw, even if they don't need it?
Well, every child, that's really not operative, because every child needs it. In other words, if your child is going to grow to adulthood, and your child is susceptible to diseases that we all are susceptible to, organ failure, anything that could go wrong with the human body, you will need some stem cell therapy to develop regenerative tissue, and that will be from stem cells developed from your own body, from parts of your own body, and in this case, it would be your baby teeth. So I do recommend it. And I feel I'm recommending something that's good for the child, but I do know that I'm recommending something also that I like.
Tell me about this idea that you like to take teeth out of healthy teeth out of a healthy jaw. Does that, because people are going to hear that, and they're going to think that that sounds...
It does. I can understand how it sounds.
It sounds almost gothic, you know.
I understand how it might sound a bit threatening. I can assure you that it's not, because I don't do it unless there is no pain at all or discomfort to the individual. I do prefer that the parents are not in the room, and I do prefer when I am extracting the teeth, I prefer to use my hand in some restraining way. Now, I don't know why this is.
Well, but do you understand, if I can interrupt you, you understand why the medical board in Alabama wants to have you examined, a psychiatric exam?
It's not a psychiatric exam, sir.
All right, well, is it a psychologist?
Yes. And no, I do not understand it, because I am uniquely qualified for this. I have never run afoul of my obligation or my oath, Hippocratic oath. I've never run afoul of the board of the state of Alabama in any way, shape, or form in my capacity as a dentist, a dental surgeon. So why they would have me reviewed psychologically, I think, is unnecessary, causes me embarrassment, and causes mistrust between myself and my patients.
Well, you've said that you enjoy removing teeth from these kids.
Yes, I do.
You also said that you prefer the parents aren't in the room and you use a hand to restrain the kid?
It is all part of what gives me the enjoyment, but I never hurt the child, nor does the child ever express any fear. The only reason why this came out was because I told the medical board of this condition.
Why did you feel the need to tell them?
Because I felt that I was uniquely qualified to do this. I didn't think it was something that was going to keep me from my profession. I thought it was something that would encourage the use of my office and my expertise in extracting healthy teeth from healthy jaws, because I enjoy it, and therefore I will do it better than other doctors.
All right, we're going to take a break here, okay, Dr. Rittenour?
Well, that's fine, but please keep in mind one thing. When I say I enjoy it, I don't enjoy it because it hurts anybody. I enjoy it because I have in my mind the idea that extracting a healthy tooth from a healthy jaw is an enjoyable thing for me. I can't explain it, but I do not believe it's destructive at all.
All right, I understand it, sir. Dr. Leo Rittenour, and our number 877-876-PHIL. Here's a man who, a dentist who admits to enjoying extracting healthy teeth from healthy jaws. It just so happens that a lot of parents are doing that now so that their kids can have stem cells later on in life. Baby teeth extracted from the jaws of children. And they're doing it in Alabama and elsewhere. Number 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back here, the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry.
Welcome back, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Our guest is Dr. Leo Rittenour in Mobile, Alabama tonight, and we're talking about a new source of stem cells, and that is the baby teeth of children. And as a result, parents are having their children brought into the dentist early and having these baby teeth removed prematurely so that these can be stored. And the stem cells from these baby teeth eventually can be used to generate new organs, perhaps, generate new skin, generate new tissue of any kind later on in the lives of those children. Dr. Rittenour is an individual who has been removed from practice by the medical board, the dental board in the state of Alabama, because you admitted to enjoying doing this, and yet you say you've never caused any pain.
I've never caused any pain at all, Phil.
But you said you enjoyed it, and now you are being examined psychologically. Have you use anesthetic?
Well, of course I use anesthetic, but I'm going to tell you something that no dentist is necessarily going to admit to you. I use anesthetic because it's required by law. But there isn't a dentist in America, I don't think there's a dentist in the world, that if they didn't have to use anesthetic, would use it. It is a very, very expensive part of the process. It's very expensive for the patient, not for the doctor. And so if the state said to me, you don't have to use anesthetic, I wouldn't be the only one who wouldn't be using it. Every dentist in America would stop using anesthetic because it's extremely expensive, extremely onerous on the patient. And in my case, it wouldn't bother me. It might bother other doctors. It wouldn't bother me. That's the only difference. That's the only difference.
When you say it doesn't bother you, what do you mean?
It wouldn't bother me not to use anesthetic. It might bother other dentists not to use it, but they still wouldn't use it. You see, they might have a guilty conscience, but it wouldn't bother me because, as I said, I have been honest and I have said I look forward to going to work when I know I have a young patient and I'm going to be pulling his or her teeth out of their jaw. I don't try to hurt them. I've never been accused of anything illegal. But I happen to enjoy it.
Dr. Leo Rittenour, our number 877-876-PHIL. Let me go to a phone call here. We have Mary on the line. Hi, Mary. You're on the line with Phil Henry and Dr. Rittenour. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Phil.
Doctor, hi.
Hi, Doc.
Yes.
Doc, I think you're a little bit sick there. You say you don't enjoy causing pain, but you get pleasure out of it. I mean, that's sort
no,
of
like... I don't. No, I don't. You're not listening, and that's not unusual. I said I do not cause pain, and so therefore I don't get any enjoyment out of causing pain. I don't cause any pain. I never said anything of the sort.
How do you not cause pain when you're yanking a tooth? There is pain.
Have you ever heard of anesthetic? Are you really? You've been sitting on hold that long, and you're that stupid. You understand we use anesthetic, right?
Don't call her stupid, okay?
Why would you ask a stupid question like that? Either way, you're gonna get feel a prick.
To Dolores in Mobile, you're on the Phil Henry Show. Go ahead.
Hey, world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here. Our number 877-876-PHIL, and we have on the line with us Dr. Leo Ritenour. We're talking about this. The more and more parents are having their children's baby teeth extracted for stem cells. And more of these patients were coming to you, doctor, but you were told to stop practicing while they reviewed your license and your procedures, and this is because you admitted to them you enjoy this.
That is right, and that is a lesson, I think, for all of us in honesty.
But let's look into this. You say that there's absolutely nothing wrong with you.
There is nothing wrong with me. The only thing wrong with me was admitting that I enjoy taking a healthy tooth out of a healthy jaw. I enjoy it. And that was my honesty.
And well, isn't a doctor supposed to only do good?
That is correct.
So removing a tooth from a healthy jaw, isn't that sort of by definition a destructive or injurious thing?
By definition, yes, it is. Absolutely. But every doctor is engaging in that. Every doctor is guilty of that. This is a technical matter I would never be able to make any one of your listeners understand. It's purely a medical matter. But every doctor who is taking baby teeth out of a jaw so they can use the stem cells is doing it in violation of the Hippocratic Oath, if you will. I'm the only one who says I like to take those teeth out of the jaw because I just enjoy doing it, not because you're going to use the stem cells later on, even though you will. Now, I did tell you that I don't like to have the parents in the room. I like to use one hand to restrain the child, and I remove my shoes. But there is nothing in any one of those acts that is against the law, that is intended to cause pain, that is intended to cause fear, or is a violation of state law.
Even taking your shoes off?
Even taking my shoes off, so long as I have some other kind of surgical covering on them.
What about the hand to restrain the child?
I don't really restrain the child. I just keep my hand on the child's shoulder, but it is the illusion of restraint for me.
And all of this is intended for you to enjoy the procedure?
I do enjoy it. It enhances it for me, yes.
Do you think there's anything wrong with you?
I don't think there's anything wrong with me because I don't do anything to injure anyone. I enjoy taking a healthy tooth out of a jaw.
And would do it without anesthetic?
And would do it without anesthetic if it was legal. But that's something every dentist would do.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Here is Dolores, who we had hanging on. Sorry, Dolores, in your city, Dr. Mobile, Alabama. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I just can't seem to grasp the concept of what you're getting enjoyment out of when you're hurting children.
No, I'm not. I just got done telling you. I'm not hurting anyone. We use anesthetic. If I didn't have to use anesthetic, I wouldn't, but then no dentist would.
And you would still enjoy it?
Every dentist would prefer not to use anesthetic. It's too expensive.
Or the fact of their enjoyment?
What's that? I enjoy what I do. And that's what made the dental board suspend my license and review my practice, because I told them that I got pleasure out of taking a healthy tooth out of a healthy jaw. If you came to see me, Dolores, and you asked me to remove all of your teeth, I would feel good about that.
What if it was something that you didn't need?
If she didn't need it, I would advise against it. I would advise against it. But if she did need it, I would enjoy doing it.
What if she didn't need it and you took the teeth out anyway?
I would never do that. I would never do that, see?
Okay. Go ahead, Dolores. I'm sorry I interrupted you.
So why are you taking, what is the whole purpose then of taking the healthy teeth out of a healthy
jaw? You know what? This woman wasn't listening either.
Yeah, this is about taking out teeth for stem cells. Thanks for calling, though. 877-876-PHIL. So I think people need to understand that you're removing these teeth because the parents are bringing those kids in.
Well, that needs to be said as well, Phil. when a parent brings a child in and says to me, we want the baby teeth removed so we can have the stem cells used later on in life, they're the ones that are opening the child up to this procedure. They're the ones that have brought this child to me and have given me the opportunity to have a good day, if you want to put it that way, by taking the teeth out of this child's jaw. But they're the ones that wanted it done because of the stem cells.
All right. And these, all right, so what the parents are asking for is something that more and more is medically going to be, I don't know, not required, but medically more and more is going to be desired.
That is correct, right.
That parents will have children's baby teeth removed by a dentist so that it is a healthy tooth that can be used for stem cells later on in the life of that child.
That is correct, absolutely.
All right. The fact is that if they come to you, you enjoy taking those teeth out.
I do enjoy that. And I've thought to myself, is there something wrong with me? Am I a sadist? No, I'm not a sadist because I don't want to inflict pain. So I'm not a sadist. Is there anything different about me than any other dentist? The fact that I relish removing healthy teeth from a jaw, especially of a child. Especially of a child. And
have you thought about that, what that means?
No, I haven't. I'm going to be talking to the doctor about that tomorrow. But I don't want to cause the child pain. There's something about taking the healthy teeth of a child and taking them out of that kid's jaw. There's a perfection to that child that I get to disrupt, and I like that.
So you don't consider that to be a dangerous thing?
No, because I don't want it to be painful, and I would never force it on the child. But if someone allows me, gives me permission to disrupt the perfection of a child's jaw by taking its teeth out, I get happy. I get happy about that. I'll be talking to the doctor about that tomorrow. But why I'm not allowed to practice dentistry is simply because I enjoy my work.
Well, it's the reason you enjoy it. If you say that you like to take healthy teeth out of a child's jaw because you like the idea of disrupting the perfection of that child, somebody someplace is going to say you're looking into causing pain.
No, I'm not. And please understand, no, I'm not looking into causing pain. You have to understand, Phil. I'm a dentist. I went to school. I went to medical school. I got 7 years of a degree. I'm dealing with parents, and in some cases, I'm dealing with just the bureaucracy. People are not very intelligent. They didn't go to college. They don't know what I know. They don't understand the medical aspects that I understand. I'm dealing with people that are simply not as thoroughly educated. And how are they to judge me? How are they to judge me when I say that I enjoy disrupting the perfection of a child's jaw, but I'm not going to hurt that child? Do you honestly think that some parent who's just got out of grade school themselves, and that's about it, and they're waiting tables, are they going to understand what I have to offer? No.
Well, that's arrogance, though.
What is?
Well, you're talking about, are they going to understand me, that I like to disrupt the perfection of a child's jaw by taking his teeth out of his head? I mean, you're getting into some stuff here, Doc. You talked about restraining the kid with one hand, taking your shoes off. Is that right?
That is correct, yes.
And not having the parents in the room. What about a nurse?
I would prefer that there's no one in the room but myself and the child.
See, that all of that stuff is going to resonate very weird with parents.
It resonates weird with parents who do not have the education or understanding of what I can do, what I'm capable of doing, and what I do as a dentist. It resonates with those people weird. But if they want their child to go to another dentist who will take their teeth out and not really know what it is he's doing, he won't understand the joy of that.
Well, I don't know, man. I can tell you this. I could take a child to a dentist and have that dentist take the kid's teeth out, and I would never need to know the guy had any joy out of it.
You may not need to know that, but in knowing it, you would know that that man took that kid's teeth out of his head with a smile on his face and with a actual purpose in his life. That's what I'm talking about.
All right, Dr. Leo Ritenour, pretty far out there, talking about how he likes to take the teeth out of a kid's head because he enjoys it. He enjoys it. Even though this is legal now, you can take these teeth and send them to a stem cell research. He likes it. He likes to use one hand to restrain them. He likes to be with his shoes off and nobody else in the room. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Phil Hendry.
877-876-PHIL. Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Dr. Leo Rittenour is on the line with us from Mobile, Alabama. Now, I realize it's very complex what we're talking about here, Doc, the idea that stem cells can be taken from baby teeth, and these stem cells are used later on to grow organs for the individuals that the teeth were taken from. So parents are having children, parents are taking their children in and having these teeth removed.
Yes, they're taking the children in and having the teeth removed so that the stem cells are spun out and used to regenerate tissue later on in life. That is correct.
So this is not an unusual thing anymore to have these teeth removed. Your problem was that you said to the medical board, the dental board, that you enjoyed doing that. But now you're telling us about how you wouldn't use anesthetic if you didn't have to, but then other doctors wouldn't either.
Well, that's the point. Now, you have to understand that most dentists, if not all dentists, if they didn't have to use anesthetic, they wouldn't. The difference is it's not going to bother me. If someone is in discomfort, I can get the job done. I don't like to see people in discomfort, but I can get the job done. It would unsettle other dentists. The other problem is that we don't have a very broad-minded group of professionals in Alabama. I don't think in the rest of the country, to be honest with you. As a dentist, if I work without my shoes on or I put a hand on a shoulder simulating restraint or I don't want a nurse in the room, that might be the proclivity and the idiosyncratic personality of a dentist, but I get the job done the same as everyone else. I don't inflict pain, but I like it. I like taking a healthy part of a human body and making it unhealthy for the moment. It's not unhealthy, but taking the perfection of that tooth away from the jaw.
That's probably what they say. Is there such a thing as them saying,
Mr. Henry, please understand, you don't know my profession.
But let me ask you, does the board say something to you like, that's an unhealthy notion?
They can't judge me.
No, but does the dental board say to you that is not a good mindset?
But they can't judge me because the men on the dental board are nowhere near my equal when it comes to proficiency. As dentists or dental surgeons, they're nowhere near my equal. And to sit in judgment on me when I am twice the dentist any of them will ever be is quite laughable, I can assure you. And now I'm not allowed to go in and practice because these same small people have decided that I have a personality that they don't understand.
All right, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. Here is Jerry in Bakersfield. Go ahead, Jerry.
Well, I have a couple questions. One, the art of doing this stem cell research, hey, I totally agree with. It's not invasive as, you know, umbilical cords and so forth.
Great. Are you a dentist?
I am not. But I have
a cousin who's a dentist. It doesn't really matter whether you agree with it or not. That's what people are doing, you know.
Well, my whole question is...
But you don't really have a professional opinion on it unless you have children.
All right, let the guy finish.
Okay. Well, there's two things. One, you're talking about you don't like having anybody to witness you when you're doing these procedures. There's two questions I have in that. One is that your protection is having somebody in there? If something happens and that child says you did something, you have no one to say you didn't do it.
Well, don't worry. I'll take care of it. And what's your next question?
Okay, and the next question is...
Well, why do you dismiss that?
Well, because the man is obviously not sincere with his questions. I think he just wants to hear himself talk.
Why do you say that?
Well, what difference does it make whether there's anybody in there? And it doesn't mean anything to him. Why don't you, sir, either ask me a real question or hang up?
Okay, you want me to ask you
all
a real
right.
question?
Are you a parent? Are you a father? Are you a father? Are you a father?
What's that?
No, you're not even a father, are you? You don't have any real reason for calling me, do you?
My personal life does not matter. I am a father, Bethany.
Yeah, no, none of your questions are making any sense. First of all, you say to me, well, that's my protection. I'll take care of myself, thank you. Now, the second question you have is what?
Well, my second question is, you were talking about how the board is going off of your word saying you enjoy inflicting pain. Did you use the wrong word?
I did not say I enjoyed inflicting pain. If you got some of the dumbest listeners I've ever met, Mr. Henry, I didn't say I enjoyed inflicting pain.
All right, we don't need to characterize people as dumb.
Well, you've had one dumb caller after the next here tonight.
We don't need to do that.
Let me ask you a question. Do you enjoy the art of the ministry?
I did not say that I enjoyed inflicting pain, so why should I continue talking to you if you can't even listen to what I'm saying?
If the man got it wrong, he got it wrong, okay?
Well, he said, I enjoy inflicting pain. I made the point over and over again that I don't enjoy inflicting pain. So why would this guy say that? Because he's not listening.
It's the way you're coming across about it.
You're typical of most Americans. You don't listen. You form conclusions based on nothing, and then you get upset when you're called on it. You're typical of this country.
I totally agree with that because of one thing. They look at the pattern of people who go into roadside and fail without their parents being there, and look at the pattern of indecent things that have happened to children.
All right, and what else? What's this other baloney about how I enjoy inflicting pain? This is a country full of people that don't listen to anything, form their conclusions on nothing, get upset when they get called on it, and this guy's giving me an argument on something he don't even understand.
Well, what are you upset about? If the guy's got the information wrong...
I'm arrogant with people that don't listen.
No, you're arrogant because you think you're the best.
I'm arrogant with people that don't listen. I said I don't enjoy inflicting pain, so why would you say that I do?
Then what do you enjoy doing? What's the whole point of it? You said you don't want to get mad.
Have you been listening to me?
Well, it's a good question. Why do you do it?
I don't know other than the fact that I like taking a healthy tooth out of a healthy jaw. Now, in the case of this man, Jerry, I might enjoy inflicting pain. That's where I'm at right now. You know? He thinks it's funny. He doesn't care what happens to kids. He doesn't care what happens to him. He just thinks the whole thing's funny. As soon as you called, I knew you didn't care.
What you just said to the guy was very funny. In the case of Jerry, I wouldn't mind inflicting pain.
Well, this guy's calling up and getting it all wrong. Just like that dental board. He reminds me of some of those people I got to talk to.
Yeah, but that dental board...
God, I hate them. God, I hate them so.
Well, you may hate them... Right, and you may hate them, and you may have a problem with them, but the fact is they've got good questions. And by the way, whether Jerry put the question right or not, you alone in the room with the kid is not good.
Now, how do you know that?
Because that's just the law is going to presume against you. So what this gentleman said was right, and you should probably have a little bit more sense when it comes to your own protection. Thank you very much, Jerry, for your call. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. Here is Kenny in Portland. Go ahead, Kenny.
Yeah, I heard a comment this guy made a little bit earlier about taking healthy teeth out of a child's mouth. I don't understand how you can do that after you've taken an oath to do no harm. I think every person in the medical field...
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
...has taken an oath
to
not do any harm.
I told you,
it sounds to me like
cells.
He enjoys doing the harm. I don't understand that part of it.
The thing of it is I, you know, and I tell you, Dr. Rittenour, you don't have any patience. What it is here, Kenny, is that parents are having these baby teeth removed for stem cells and so that later on they can use it to regenerate tissue, okay?
I said the same thing. I said the exact same thing, and this guy doesn't understand.
All right, but you don't have any patience.
And the fact that I enjoy doing it doesn't mean I enjoy taking teeth out of a person's jaw, even though they're healthy. Yes, I enjoy that. But it ain't illegal. It ain't illegal because of the stem cell thing.
As a doctor, even though a dentist is maybe not the highest level of medical science, how can you justify doing harm. I don't care if the kid, you know, maybe in the future it'll help the kid, maybe it won't. But, you know, today, what's it going to do? How can you do something like
that's
that?
Funny.
To a young kid. And get joy out of it. And get joy. You know, it sounds like, you have fun with
macaroni and cheese. How do you eat your macaroni and cheese without any cheese?
It sounds like you might have a psychological problem if you enjoy seeing kid in pain.
You're the guy with the psychological problem calling up about macaroni and cheese when we're talking about something deadly serious, the fact that I enjoy pulling teeth out of a man's jaw and not even using anesthetic.
You know what? The only person here who's weird is you, Doc. Everybody else is making perfect sense.
I'm weird. This guy said something about macaroni and cheese, and he ain't even got his lower teeth. And nobody pulled them out. They probably just fell out.
No,
it's called crack. Isn't it called crack? It's called crack.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
No. It's real hard when you're trying to do the right thing, you know, because...
Hi, this is Attorney Tom Watley. So much
we about. Heard like a big old boom next door to the classroom, and it was
and he
like...
pulled his pants down?
Famous Phil Hendry show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, knows exactly how to do it, and goes places other talk shows would not dare go. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, and we're online at philhendryshow.com, philhendryshow.com. A mistaken robber, a woman who was just in a store and is mistaken for a robber and then tasered by cops. Will be the topic of our discussion with Dave Oliver this hour. He joins us to discuss the use of tasers by police. Still to come tonight, the most bizarre 911 call that you ever heard. you know, anyway, so we'll play that for you. 877-876-7445. Our website is philhendryshow.com. So we invite you to go over there and get a backstage pass. You can watch the live streaming video of the show each and every night as we go where, you know, no man has gone before and all that stuff. And you also have access to the thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of all of our archived audio and all of our podcasts and all of our classic Phil podcasts and our news feed and our email and everything else, as well as our shop, of course. Pick up our classic best of CDs. It's over there at philhendryshow.com. Dave Oliva is with us. Dave is a student at L.A. Canyon College in northern L.A. County. He's taking criminal justice in preparation for a career in law enforcement. And he joins us tonight. We wanted to talk a little bit about this use of tasers. We have another taser story here, Dave. What do you think in general about the use of tasers?
I think, in general, I think they're a great benefit to police officers. I think many lives have been saved when you don't have to rely necessarily on a decision between, say, using a billy stick or PR-24 and a deadly force when you have something that is going to control the situation, you know, but it's not the use of deadly force. I think it's a great... a great asset to a police officer to have something like that.
And the controversy that's been going on around tasers has been at times quite vociferous given the object of the tasing. For instance, the elderly woman. What do you think of that? Is that all overblown?
I think it is, yeah. I think that especially when you get older people, my experience has been, even though I'm not yet LAPD, I mean, my whole desire is to eventually go into the LAPD Academy and become an LAPD officer, you know, but my experience has been just, you know, reading up on it and going on ride-alongs and so forth, that old people are, we're going to get a lot of sympathy, you know, when a police officer is forced to use a taser on them. Most people think that an elderly person is going to be more at risk. Let me tell you, Mr. Henry, taser is very, very safe. Everybody, you know, can be tased safely. You could tase a child. We've seen incidents where a child is tased, and And the more that a police officer uses a taser, the more that he's able to control a situation.
Now, we have here in Rancho Cordova, California, a 24-year-old woman who went into the CVS pharmacy there to get some candy for a movie, but she ended up getting mistaken for a robber, according to both the woman and the officer's accounts. Her name is Andrea Borman. She walked to the store near her apartment in Rancho Cordova on Monday night. While she was inside, the place was robbed and the suspect took off. When Borman walked outside after the robbery, she was contacted by officers who told her to wait by the police cruiser. Officers say she matched the same general description as the suspect. You know the story?
I'm a little bit familiar with it. Yes, I am.
Okay. I just got to read it for my listeners.
Sure.
The officers say she matched the same general description as the suspect, a black female wearing dark clothing, according to Borman. She tried to show officers her receipt from the store, and then things escalated, and they eventually did tase her. So she wasn't the robber, but she got tased. Is that unusual?
No, that's not going to be that unusual. I think people need to understand something. Just because you got tased doesn't mean that you have been, that anyone thinks you're guilty. That's got nothing to do with it. You will get tased sometimes in order for the police to calm the situation down. You might get tased sometimes in order for the police to clear a doorway, to make sure that everything is under control. If you have a lot of people running around in a store or in a situation that is not yet secure by the police officers on site, and they need to secure the site, they're going to use their tasers to just, okay, what do we got? You know, what do we got? And what do I mean by that? They need to assess, you know.
We often hear police officers say they have to assess the situation.
That is correct, right.
What does that mean?
Well, that means, okay, where's the good guys? Where's the bad guys? What's going on? And the way to do that, a lot of times, is to tase as many people as you can who are in the area, so that you can start to pick through who is what you want to call a suspect and who is not a suspect.
Now, in the case of this young lady, Angela Borman, who was tased, she just was in the store getting something to eat. She's getting a snack for a movie. And obviously, she's not the person that robbed the place. Let's listen to her, Andrea Borman. She's talking to Channel 40, Fox Channel 40, out in the Inland Empire of California, on what happened when she was mistaken for a thief.
It's just hard when you're trying to do the right thing, you know, because a trip to the CVS turned into complete hysteria.
It was pretty bad. I was knocked to the ground. I was in a chokehold. And then while I was laying on the ground, I was tased while I was on the ground with my arms behind my back. I was tased.
So she's obviously not happy about it.
No, she's not going to be happy about it, but she doesn't really understand what police procedure is. She's laying on the ground, okay, but she has to be tased because of the fact that she was in a store that got robbed, and she's still, you know, talking, and basically, they've got a taser. I don't know what the exact thing is, but my understanding is that she kept on saying, you know, I didn't do it, blah, 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 or something, you know.
Well, she said she had a receipt she was trying to show the officers that proved that, that you know, she was not the robber, that she bought something.
Well, that ain't going to prove nothing.
No, but it was the receipt, you know.
No, that ain't going to prove nothing.
That she bought something?
No, that ain't going to prove nothing, because the robber could have a receipt that says, hey, I bought something too. So what we have here with this lady is a classic example of an individual. Police are trying to do their job. They tased her. They probably tased, you know, a lot of people in the course of the night, to try to figure out who the robber was, and she's gonna try and find the closest TV camera to talk into it and say, hey, look, you know, look what happened to me, and I don't know if she's looking to have a lawsuit. So
I'm clear here. She said she was on the ground, her hand.
No, I understand what she said.
So, give it to me again. Why would somebody who's laying on the ground with their hands behind their back, why would they be tased?
A lot of times you're going to tase them if you have said to them, okay, you're in cuffs now, you're laying on the ground, I am engaged in other aspects of this investigation, and I need for you to not talk anymore, and they keep on talking, a lot of times it's a reminder to, to not talk.
Well, where do you get off? I mean, not get off. But where at what point does somebody say, "Boy, that sounds like an excessive force"?
Wait, what do you mean?
To tell somebody not to talk?
Well, if you say don't talk and they keep talking, you use a taser. Now, it's not excessive force because you're not causing any injury. You know,
but it's painful.
It's painful. Have you ever been tased, Mr. Henry?
No, I have not.
Okay, then you don't know. I mean, it's painful for, like, people make a really big deal out of it, but if it was so bad, how come you see everybody in the news getting tased? You know, how come you always see, like, Rick Sanchez or whoever that was that got tased? Because it's not that bad. And so when someone's talking, you'll tase them to say, please don't speak anymore. What are you doing here? They don't have a quick answer. You have to tase them. You got to get them to the ground. Are you the store owner? Are you a suspect? And they're, I don't know. You have to tase them. Tasing is not as dangerous as people have led to believe in all of the stories that we've heard about it forever and ever more. It's not that bad. And it makes police officers, it gives us a bad name. I say us, I'm not yet a police officer, but I like to think I speak for them. It gives us a bad name when somebody like this lady is going, yeah, they tased me, okay. You know.
Well, how do you hear that? I mean, the average citizen's going to hear that person got tased. They're going to think it's pain.
If you talk about a policeman?
Yeah.
Well, we hear that and we go, yeah. If someone says to me, yeah, I got tased, we go, okay, and? Because they're waiting for you to go, oh, man, no kidding? Did it hurt? No, you're not going to do that. You're going to say, when a civilian says to you, and then I got tased, you're going to say to them, okay, and, and then what else? You're waiting for the interesting part, that it never comes. And
all right, so to you guys, getting tased is no big thing. And to the average civilian, it sounds like a pretty scary thing.
And I blame the media for that, sir.
And you blame the media why? Because there's been so many demonstrations of it that show...
They've got demonstrations of people that are going, ah, ow, ow, Like Rick Sanchez, that famous one, he's going, ah. And they play it up like it's, and that lady too, She's going, oh, they tased me. If we didn't have the taser, then we would have to resort to deadly force. And that means there'd be more, civilians that are dead as opposed to fewer. So I think that this lady here, every time a civilian gets on television and says, they tased me, what they're doing really is showing the rest of the country that they're kind of dishonest. Because they're trying to get sympathy for something that people know is not that bad,
All right, Dave Oliva is joining us. So getting tased is not the painful and excruciatingly frightening experience that so many of us imagine it is. People are making a big thing out of nothing, is what you're saying, right?
Yeah, that basically, yeah.
And that police officers, as a matter of course, will tase anybody and anyone in order to figure out who the good guys and the bad guys are. We're going to come back with your phone calls for Dave Oliva as we talk about the idea of the police, tasers, how often, how little. 877-876-FILL. Your phone calls with our guest Dave Oliva next. 877-876-7445. And next hour, the news hour with Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry.
We're talking here with Dave Oliva, a prospective L.A. police officer. He's a student at L.A. Canyon College who takes law enforcement, criminal justice. And we're talking about the tasing of suspects by police officers. We had an incident here in California this past weekend where an innocent woman, a woman who was in a store, got tased by a police officer. Dave, you're saying that innocent people get tased all the time.
Oh, yeah. And that's the thing I think we need to... let people know.
So the police are tasing people who are not necessarily guilty of a crime because they want to, in your, what you're doing is control the situation.
Well, that's exactly right. You have to, as a police officer, your number one job is to control the situation, to make sure that the people are compliant to your commands, you know. I think when I say that innocent people, you say innocent people, well, what do you mean? I mean, first of all, at the crime scene, you don't know yet who is innocent. There is someone who committed a crime. There are people who are innocent, but you don't know who. So you have to tase as many people as you can to figure out what's going on, really. And so, look, there's two young men that I know right now in the LA Police Academy. You can tase them, and they don't even hit the ground. I've seen at least one who's a guy by the name of Randy Shepard. Anybody who knows Randy knows what I'm talking about. And he's been tased, and it'll be, I wish I could describe it, but basically he just, like, it hits him, and he goes, like, you know, he grits his teeth and just holds on and does not never fall. So the reason why I'm saying that...
Oh, are you kidding me? I mean, I've seen huge men drop by a taser.
Yeah, I mean, it's very powerful, but I'm saying it's not so powerful that you can't will, like in the case of this one guy, the Randy Shepard I'm telling you about, can't will yourself to just...
What does he do?
I can't really describe it other than to say he just grits his teeth and just, you know, like right when the taser hits, he just tells himself, no way, no way, no way. You know, it's not going to beat me. And I'm not saying everybody can do that, but I'm saying that being tased, and that's why a lot of these old people who get tased, especially that old lady that I heard, it's really unfortunate, Mr. Henry, that they are at that age dishonest and scream and yell about the cop being police brutality when they're, I mean, I hate to say it, she's just a lying old woman, you know.
Are you talking about the lady in Texas?
Yes, sir.
877-876-PHIL is the number here on the world famous Phil Henry Show with Joshua in Greensboro, North Carolina. Go ahead, Joshua.
Yeah, I just want to clarify a few things. For one, I am a police officer, and I also have a bachelor's degree in criminal justice. As an officer, we don't go around tasing just anybody, just the whole situation. The only time we break our taser if we're threatened is an escalating force policy. It's called use of force policy. And we have to follow that. If we don't follow that, we open ourselves up for lawsuits. It's just how it works.
Well, yeah, but it doesn't mean that everybody you tase is going to be a criminal, right? Sometimes you're going to tase someone who is innocent. And that's what I'm saying.
No, sir.
Yeah, you are.
What you were saying, you had it seem like that we're going around tasing. You know, we go out there and say there was a convenience store robbery, and we're just going to go there and we're going to tase everybody until we find the guilty one. That is not the...
Well,
no.
You,
if we have somebody, if we tase somebody, and we have a suspect, say we have a person that matches the description of the suspect, we pull them aside, we do stop them, we do question them, and if they get combatant, we don't tase them. We try to minimize the situation first.
Right.
Well, if we tell them to be quiet, they don't be quiet. Well, we do a thing. We handcuff them and we put them in the police car until we can. All right, look, you calm down now. All right, now what situation? We don't. Once we have them down, we do not tase them. Actually, you cannot tase them.
Well, in the case here in California of this lady in Rancho Cordova, she was tased on the ground, but that's because she wouldn't shut up, you know?
Well,
and so the police officer just said, here, you know, and he tased her just to get her to shut up.
Just to shut up.
You can't do that. If you do that, you open yourself up for lawsuits. You know, there are so many steps. Sir, have you reviewed your, you want to be a member of the LAPD, if I recall, right?
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Uh-huh.
Reviewed the policy for community policing?
Use of force policy? Yes, sir. Use of force policy? Yes, sir. And LAPD has a booklet, use of force policy, that we have to review. Yes, sir. And you're right, you know. But in a situation like in L.A., you know, when they had the riots break out, I don't know if you remember back the Rodney King riot. Okay, that
yes,
is hairy. Okay, yeah. So that was really hairy for those police officers on scene down at Western, you know. So now you got, like, say, a half a dozen police officers, but you got 30 or 40 civilian, you know, citizens who are throwing bottles and stuff. So you just start dropping people with tasers and just, you know.
Okay, let's take the taser out of the situation, okay, with the lady in the CVS. All right, so
yeah.
Once they had her outside, right, and she wouldn't shut up,
right.
If we didn't have a taser, right. Would it be okay to shoot her?
Well, if she
okay to escalate the force to use of deadly force because she won't shut up?
If her talking was designed to make the police officer unsafe,
the only way you can use a taser if you are at a threat. If they are handcuffed,
that's right.
Okay, Joshua, thank you. I got to take a break, though. I appreciate your call. It's some expertise there from a police officer. Thank you, sir. A police officer in Greensboro.
No, but I mean, what he's saying is true, Mr. Henry, but there's a lot that he can't say because civilians are not going to understand. When he said to me, would you use deadly force against that woman if she wouldn't shut up, if she just is talking so much that the police officer cannot clear his mind, you know, and know what the next thing is that he's got to do, then you got to shoot her.
You're going to shoot someone for talking too much.
If it presents, just you heard what he said, if it presents a situation where the police officer is in deadly, you know, it's deadly, you know?
Shoot her.
Yeah, if she's just blah, 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 blah.
All right, our number 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back with Dave Oliva on tasers, the use of force, and more here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Blah, 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 blah.
Phil Hendry. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back. Here with me is Dave Oliva from L.A. Canyon College. A woman mistaken for a robber is tasered by, I think these were Sacramento County Sheriffs. I said Inland Empire. This is up north.
Yes, sir. That was Northern California. I made the same mistake.
Yeah, I thought this was out San Bernardino. This is Rancho Cordova, and it was the Sacramento County Sheriff's Department. I want to ask you this question before we go to a phone call. Give me an example of a situation, not the L.A. riots. Give me an example of a more commonplace situation that a police officer might face, Dave, where he's going to have to start tasing more than one person.
Well, I do remember a ride-along that I remember being on whereby they came up on a party. It was some kind of a barbecue or party. It was out here at Legion Park, and which is down near Dodger Stadium.
Right.
And this was a group of people. They were pretty big people. There was a lot of really big men. You know, it was a hot day, and everybody was drinking beers. And these, like, one, two, three, probably four or five of these very large dudes started to approach the police officer in a menacing fashion. You know, hey, what are you doing here? And shut up and everything. And that's when the police officer just nodded to his partner. They just looked at each other and nodded. And they dropped all four of them with the tasers. And now, the reason why they did that...
They dropped four of these big guys.
Yeah, yeah, because the reason why they did it is you got four big Samoans drinking Ice House beer on a hot day, and their girlfriends are yelling at them, and you are not even going to go, oh, I know what I'll do. I think I'll go up and talk to them. Yeah, right.
You know, well, why wouldn't you? You're a police officer to protect and to serve. You're contacting civilians.
Well, hold on, man. Yeah, I mean, if you were going down to a guy's house and there's a guy just washing his car or something, but these are like four huge Samoans and their girlfriends are all jumping up and down. And
well, what were they doing that was threatening the officers?
What were they doing?
Yeah.
They were big. You know, what are you talking about?
Yeah. Well, because these men were big dudes and they're drinking beer.
They were drinking Ice House beer. Are you familiar, Mr. Henry, with Ice House beer?
Am I familiar with Ice House beer? Yeah, as a matter of fact, I am. 6% alcohol?
Yeah, it's got a kick, you know. And if you imagine a big Samoan spending the whole day, it's now about 3 o'clock. So you know he's been probably packing these ice houses away since easy 10 a.m.
And why you're making that assumption, I don't know. So all these officers did is they saw these four big Samoans approaching them with, and this whole thing about Samoan, I mean, you know, we're bordering on racism here.
No, they were. They were Samoans, you know.
They weren't Hispanic, they weren't...
No, I mean, these are big. If you've ever seen a Samoan, like rugby players or football players, and they're all like walking, they're not even walking, they're going, if you've seen a Samoan... They go one leg and then the other. They rock back and forth. And they're rocking back and forth with their hair in a ponytail, and they have tank tops on, and they got, what do you call it, like an ice house beer. And this officer just looks at the other one and goes, you know, you got it. You know, just they nod at each other like, you know, not a problem. You know, bam, 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 bam. They all went down like, you know.
All right, 877, that to me is 877-876-PHIL. That to me sounds like a lawsuit. Let's take a phone call here. We have Herman in Dallas, Texas on the Phil Henry Show. Go ahead, Herman.
Hello. Let me preface my statement by saying this. I'm a 15-year military veteran, infantry. My first cousin is a 20-year Dallas police officer. That is excessive force. I'm not exactly sure what this guy's talking about, and I hope he never hits the streets. Because there's poor judgment. Once your suspect is subdued on his stomach or on his back, he should be cuffed. There's no reason to taser anyone. Only time you should taser anyone or use excessive force when you feel bodily harm coming against you. Any police manual will tell you that. So you just don't jump out just tasing people just because you have a taser on your hip. That's a lawsuit. That's unconstitutional. You cannot taser someone for free speech. You're a police officer. You protect and to serve and to be diplomatic and use diplomacy and tact in that fashion. You guys have
exactly.
A good day.
Exactly. I agree with him.
Well, that's not what you're saying, though.
Yeah, I am.
Well, no, you're not. You said first of all, you said in the case of the girl, she was talking too much.
I'm saying if she's talking so much that the police officer is getting so distracted, like he doesn't know what's up, you know, and she's all blah, 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 and he's like, he gets,
how can you tase somebody?
No, hold on, Mr. Ernie. It's not deadly force. You know, if she's just blah, 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 like we're disoriented, that's what I'm trying to say. He's all disoriented and confused. He doesn't know where he is anymore because she won't shut up. Then, yeah. I agree with what that man said.
And what about those four Samoans that you're talking about?
That, you just heard what the man said. If you feel that you're being approached in a menacingly way, and that's what they go, man, we're not even going to talk about this, because look at this, man. Because I remember when they pulled up, I remember the guy driving goes, oh, man, look at this, you know. You know.
Well, what does that mean, oh, man, look at this?
He's got four pissed off Samoans drinking Ice House beer. If you're familiar.
I know Ice House beer has 6% alcohol. I understand that. I just didn't know that four guys drinking beers, no matter how big they are, posed a threat. Paul in Hawaii, you're on the Phil Henry Show here with Dave Oliva. Go ahead, please.
Hi. You know, I just cannot believe my ears. You know, I'm listening to this guy, and I'm like, wow. You know, if he's in the academy, you know, he shouldn't be allowed to graduate. I mean, with that mindset. Anyways, having said that, I think tasers are supposed to be a last resort. I don't see, you know, that's why there's backup, man. I mean, what about backup? I mean, if you're not big and you're concerned about two or four guys being too big, that's why there's the radio.
You still got to use
backup.
A taser, man. Yeah, you still got to use it. And another thing, if you call backup and you only have another car available to you, okay, so there's now four against four. That's not, you know... I mean, that's four big Samoans going up against four regular-sized guys.
I apologize. So, I don't mean to tell you how to do your job. I'm not a policeman. Let me clarify that. And, you know, that if I'm a civilian and I get tased over the fact that I'm too big or if I'm holding a Budweiser or a Corona, come on. I mean, there's got to be more thoughts into tasing someone other than just the fact that they don't like the way I look.
That's a good point Paul's making, because you haven't said anything to me yet other than these were four big dudes, you know.
Well, I mean, look, they were four big dudes, and there have been complaints. There have been complaints that there have been some, you know, I'll tell you, I'm sorry, I don't want to be crude or anything, but there was some family, and they were farting, you know what I mean? They're farting, and they're belching and all this stuff. Okay? Okay, sir?
You're talking to me?
Both of you guys. Do you understand?
Okay, so you're telling me they were farting and belching.
Yeah, and so they called the police to say that they were getting out of control, they're farting and everything, and they're picking their girlfriends up, you know, and you could, their dresses were going over their heads. So that's a situation where you don't think it's necessarily dangerous, but if a dude's going to pick his girlfriend up and cut a fart and her dress goes over her head, you have to think he's capable of something dangerous.
If I call for backup
and I get two guys, that's four guys, and there's four big Samoans cutting farts, and
you know, just because these dudes are cutting farts, man, I don't hear that to be they don't have guns, you know, they don't have.
You know what?
Who are they hurting?
You know,
Don't get it, you know.
I don't get it.
I apologize. I'm going to have to go in a few seconds. But I just wanted to say, I think the Academy, you know, they're pretty good at weeding people out. And I think, you know, that person should consider doing something else. Or
well,
please stay away from my weed.
That's not very kind, man. You know.
Thank you. And, I'm so sorry. You guys have a good evening. Thank you very much for your show.
Well, but again, you know, if... See, that guy hung up and everything.
Of course he's hanging up. I mean, you said that all these Samoan guys were doing were cutting farts, belching, picking their girls up so their dresses went over their heads, and for that they get tased.
Mr. Henry, no, not for that they get tased. Not for that.
Well, then why did they get tased?
When the radio car pulled up, these four guys were going, not walking forward, they were going side to side, rocking back and forth, side to side, right?
Uh-huh.
But that was them walking forward. That's what they looked like. That's how big they were. And they're all like, hey. It's like four big... I mean, I'm sorry to have to use the word, but it's like big four big retards just going, And
yeah, you know, that use of that word, I might have forgiven it if it had been applicable, but that, four big retards...
Well, I mean, what are you going to do if there's four escape, you know, and they're like, hey. So these two officers go, you know what, man, you know, no discussion necessary. That's what I'm trying to say.
No, whatever it is you're trying to say, you have not yet justified the use of tasers on these guys. Here's Brad in Madison, Wisconsin. Brad, you're on the Phil Henry Show. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Mr. Henry, I really hope that this gentleman... doesn't become involved in law enforcement. His concept of when to use force is totally off the wall. You only use force...
Well, I mean, I learned it from LAPD, you know.
I've been a police officer for 18 years, and the only time that you use force is to confront a direct threat. Gentlemen,
right.
Four big gentlemen approaching you, no matter how big they are, does not constitute a direct threat. You just need to use your mouth and use common sense and call for some backup and talk to people. If you're that quick to use...
What if they're using drinking Ice House beer and everything?
That's immaterial. Whether they're drinking or not, if they're not posing any kind of threat to you whatsoever, talk to people. That's how... When you're that quick to use force,
mm-hmm.
That's what gives
mm-hmm.
police officers a bad name.
There you go. Yeah. That's a really good point that Brett, what happens in LA or Madison, every cop is tinged with that, you know.
I'm not trying to make any police officer. I love the police. My whole life I've wanted to be a police. Okay? But, I mean, you gotta admit, and I'm sorry, that, what would you do?
Talk. Talk to them. Find out what they want. What's going on?
Well,
you have to, as an officer, keep your cool. If you don't keep your cool, they're not going to keep their cool. And you escalate the situation, then, not them.
Yeah.
And that's a
problem. I mean,
all they knew was what was called in, that these four big guys are sitting there being rude, cutting farts and everything.
How
there's
is
no,
that
there's
even
no law against
remotely
being rude? There's no
how,
law
and how do you
rude.
How do you tase a guy because he's farting?
I'm just telling you that the police officers looked at these four big, big dudes. I mean, they were big.
How big? How tall were they?
Well, I mean, they were probably about 6'1 or 6'2.
Okay, and what were they, really big, huge guys like football players?
Yeah, they looked like SC, you know, they went to SC or something.
Okay, so they're big freaking football players. 250 pounds, whatever.
No, man, these guys are like 300 pounds.
Okay.
And this guy, the gentleman I'm speaking to right now, is a police officer, did he say?
Yes, he did.
Okay, sir.
Yes, sir.
Why not tase him and then figure it out later?
You can't do that.
Well, that, to me,
that's a lawsuit. If you drop a taser on somebody without a direct threat, you're asking to get sued. And not only does your department get sued, you get sued personally. And I'm not going to put myself on the line for something stupid like that.
If you and I were partners and I tased all four of them, you wouldn't back me up?
No. If you tased all four of them, I have no choice at that point but to help you out, but that doesn't mean I agree with what you're doing.
Okay, good. I'm glad you got my back.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But that's at the time. I'm not dropping my taser. Okay, I'm going to have to deal with the mess you created. That's different.
All right, I have to take a break. I'm sorry. I'm laughing.
What is so funny, sir? I'd like to know.
I mean, what Brad said there, I have no choice. I gotta help you. You've just put him in a bad situation. He's not going to put his taser on him. He just told you. And whatever it is you think you're going to do, what are you going to do, handcuff all of them?
Well, yeah.
Anyway, Brad, thank you so much for your call. 877-876-PHIL. So, you're going to tase all four and ask questions later, huh?
I'm telling you, they were four big, big.
Well, what are we talking about, man? The Incredible Hulk? Hold on. 877-876-7445. The world-famous Phil Henry Show. Next hour, Robert Leonard and Bud Dickman in the News Hour.
This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Back here with Dave Oliva from L.A. Canyon College. Dave is hoping to be a member of the LAPD after he graduates and goes into the L.A. Police Academy. We're talking about a tasing that took place up in Sacramento County, but it happens every day all over America that officers are called upon to use their tasers. In this case, the woman was not a suspect. She was just an innocent bystander. She was somebody who went into the store, but nonetheless was tased as the result of a series of actions. Now, the Sacramento County Sheriff's Department said today that the... What's today? Tuesday or... today? Is today Tuesday? I don't even know what the hell today is. Tuesday, right? Yeah. Tomorrow is... hold on for just a second. I got to find out what this... Today is Tuesday, yeah. So it happened today, and they say that their officers' actions were justified, Dave.
Well, yeah, and because that she was being verbally argumentative, and later she resisted. And by the way, Mr. Henry, her hands were not behind her back when she was tased. They were, they didn't like tase her because she was handcuffed. They tried to handcuff her, but she wouldn't shut up. You know,
well, if somebody's talking, how does that keep you from handcuffing them?
It's distracting, and it's just noise, you know. You're trying to handcuff them, and they're bitching and moaning. I mean, what?
No, I don't see that as... I don't get that.
You're not a police officer, you know.
No, I may not be a police. I don't understand why you can't handcuff somebody, even if they're talking and bitching and moaning or whatever it is you're saying. Here's Jerry in Charlotte, listening on WBCN. Go ahead, Jerry. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
You know, Phil, when you think you've heard everything, you finally hear another time. And if somebody was just turning into the station, they'd say, this is a comedy routine. I mean, the gentleman, Dave, I guess his name is, you won't even make the academy. Because I was a field training officer in Chicago for almost 20 years. I know exactly. What? Chicago is one of the last municipalities, large major cities, that adopted the taser because of the liability factor involved. Number one, you have certain levels of.
I wouldn't call Chicago example of a great police department.
Well, let's not get into that, okay? Go ahead, Jerry.
Here's what I'm trying to say. You have certain levels as a police officer of reactions. Now, when we were in the academy many years ago, the thing we were taught was the most effective weapon, the most deadly weapon you have is not your gun, it's not your taser, it's not your billy club or your ass, it's your brain, it's your mouth. And if you have a restraint when you come up with a situation, more often than not, you're going to be met with restraint from the offenders or the subjects. When you say you're going to tase a woman for mouthing off, you know how quickly you would be arrested for battery, aggravated battery? I mean, a lawyer would have a field day with you.
What are you talking about? If she's making it unsafe for the police to do their job, and she's all blah, 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 blah.
It makes no difference whatsoever. I mean, what you have to do.
I mean, with all due respect.
Dave, get away.
Hold on. We're not talking about Drew Peterson. Go ahead.
Dave, you've been talking. Let me have my say, okay? I think I know what I'm talking about here.
Peterson got away.
You have a level. Every time you have a situation, you judge by the level of that situation. For example, you start with talking. Then if you have to go to a certain physical force, you try to, do the minimum amount of force. You try to put a person in handcuffs, you take them down. If that doesn't work, then you go to the taser if you have to use it. But a taser usually is a last resort, almost as much as a weapon is. I mean, you're not going to shoot somebody with a gun just because they're mouthing off to you. I mean, I can't count the hundreds of times I was called every name in the book. Do you think I was going to shoot somebody because of that? No. I mean,
disorient you and everything, and they're calling, if they disorient you and they're yelling and stuff, what if they're talking so much that Drew Peterson gets away?
Will you knock it off with Drew Peterson?
What's that?
And now he's going on with Drew Peterson. He's trying to get your goat with Drew Peterson.
And Dave, here's one other thing that you need to understand. You cannot fire a taser at an individual, four different individuals, just like you would fire a gun. Because with a gun, you can fire four shots in about a second and a half. With a taser, you have to take the probes out. There's no way you're going to taser four people all at the same time. So that's not even relevant. Okay?
If you have two guys, what if you got two guys?
Let me tell you something. I roll on so many calls with large individuals, and more often than not, even if they're drunk.
Not they four big Samoans, man. And they were drinking an ice-house beer, too. That was the other thing I was going to tell you.
Phil Hendry.
6% alcohol.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
911, where's your emergency?
We're at Cafe 411.
Please welcome Ricky Gervais.
Learned anything from this tragedy,
it's just hard when you're trying to do the right thing, you know.
Bastard from a basket!
This is serious. World famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch, and where we go where other talk shows cannot go, wish they could, but cannot go. Only we, only I, only us. And, of course, our website is philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com for all your Phil Hendry needs. Go over there, get a live streaming video of our show, as well as live streaming audio of the show, as well as everything, man, everything that you could possibly imagine, all of the archives, all of the news feeds, all of our podcasts, they're all there. And, of course, our shop where you can get our CDs soon, more merchandise and more information appearing there at our shop, our merchandise store on philhendryshow.com. So coming up this hour, Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard join me for our news hour. And a lot of things happening in the news. One of them, we like these lists, and we have one that I thought was highly relevant, and I think might even be appropriate to start our hour with. And that is, we've got more Ricky Gervais news. Do you want to hear that?
Yeah, I want to hear, did he say that could be on there?
We got more of that. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I wish they would have told that one joke.
Well, he's going to tell it. We've got audio of him telling the joke that got cut.
Yeah.
No, we're going to hear that. However, first up, Seven American companies that will disappear in 2011. Seven American companies that will disappear in 2011. Now, they do not come in any particular order. We'll obviously read them in a certain order, but that not it won't be a certain order. I'll just read off the names of these companies, but it doesn't mean this is number one or this is number five. This is a website, 24/7 Wall Street. And they recently looked at a number of large American companies, some of which are actually owned by foreign companies. Then why are they called American companies if they're actually owned by foreign companies? Well, I guess they used to be American companies, huh?
Yeah, I think they were American, then they got bought, huh?
They're American companies that got bought by foreign companies, and maybe that's one of the reasons why they're no longer American companies. I don't know. The website looks at a variety of companies, those that are in deep trouble, the merger and acquisition targets, firms and industries that have too many competitors for any to become highly profitable, or corporations that Wall Street believes are worth more in parts than as a whole, meaning sell them off, you know? Or as Gordon Gekko said in Wall Street, why did you wreck the company, Gordon? Because it was wreckable.
Yeah, that was Michael Douglas. He got nominated for a Golden Globe, didn't win.
Yeah, that's right. He didn't win.
Right.
Okay. Why, did you do that to stick that in?
Yeah, why'd say that? I'm just letting you know. I thought it was good.
I didn't see the new one, man. Did anybody see that? I didn't see that. I want to see it. The companies below were picked from this universe of companies that are wreckable, that are in deep trouble with merger and acquisition targets and so on and so forth. The companies below picked from this universe because odds are they are that they will not exist a year from now. These are the companies. Saab, USA, S-A-A-B. You know who Saab is, the auto manufacturer. They've tried to create a renaissance of sorts. The company was sold to Netherlands specialty car maker Spyker last year. Spyker took an awful risk, particularly in the U.S., because Saab is one of the few car firms that did recover when the U.S. car market expanded last year. The total number of cars and light vehicles sold in America in 2010 was up 11% to 11.6 million. Sales of some niche brands served. Porsche sales in the U.S. were up 29% to 29,000. Audi sales rose 22% to over 101,000. So Saab, in other words, was the overall company for all of these.
Even Porsche, huh?
Even Porsche. But Saab sales collapsed, falling 37% to 5,445. American car companies have also created new lines of vehicles that have begun to sell well, particularly in the middle market where Saab operates. The Japanese still control the lower price, high quality portion of the market, and Korea's Hyundai took share from nearly everyone last year as its sales rose 24%. So there's no room in the American market for a tiny operator like Saab. Saab USA will probably no longer be around, even though there's the brands that it handles. Porsche, Audi are very popular. So they'll be spun off, or however the hell they say it. And maybe that's an example of a company whose parts are worth more than its whole.
Yeah, I've got Porsche, man. Everybody want to get a Porsche.
Yeah, I mean, Porsche could stand on its own almost. Here's another company that will not exist in 2011. Are you ready? At the end of 2011. It will disappear this year. Office Depot. Now, again, we're not saying for sure, but this is the opinion of a number of individuals who responded to this 24/7 Wall Street poll. The company's running third in a three-horse race with Office Max and Staples. Office Depot also has to compete with small business centers and Sam's Clubs and Costco. The firm operates on razor-thin margins while managing 1,150 locations, which are very costly due to employee and real estate expenses. Office Depot is a strong candidate to be taken over by one of its rivals or a broader retail chain like Target.
Oh, you mean Target to take them over to have an office section?
That wouldn't be a bad idea. It wouldn't be a bad idea. Actually, no, it would be a bad idea. Just have Target for the crap that Target sells, and they can own Office Depot.
What are you talking about?
We were thinking maybe if Target expanded the actual physical space of their store and created an entire office. I wouldn't dig that. That would be too funky, you know?
Yeah, it'd be like you're going in there to buy a desk, and there's like candy, you know, like Coke syrup on the floor.
Yeah, that's how I, if you've got, you hit it right on the head. That's how I perceive places like Target. There's like candy wrappers everywhere. Get out of here. All right, the market is too competitive for Office Depot to stand on its own. A consolidation in the sector would allow a merged operation to cut thousands of people and close hundreds of locations. Operating margins then would not be so modest. So there we go again with the solution, and the solution is to consolidate. The bottom line, fatter, people are on the street, fewer stores. Every time there's a merger, remember that, ladies and gentlemen. And, of course, not every merger is a smart merger. You know, we have so many people that just think that business cannot do anything wrong and everything the government does is wrong. And that just doesn't make any sense. That just doesn't, first of all, history doesn't teach us that. History doesn't teach us that. There wouldn't be need for government regulation in some areas if business did everything right. Now, we've in our industry, I've given you example after example, and the prime example is the merger of Sirius with XM. The worst possible timing, for that deal. The company's still in the hole. They put a bunch of people on the street. They're not making any money. They're not even paying half of their people. I mean, it's a disaster. So this idea of merging companies, it might have worked out had there been a little bit more forethought by the people that managed that merger and said, geez, you know, this economy looks pretty shaky. As a matter of fact, in about 2 months, the whole thing's going to go down the crapper. I don't think that was unforeseeable. Number three, Dean Foods. Is this Jimmy Dean? Is that what they're talking about?
I think I like Jimmy Dean's, pork.
I don't know. The maker of dairy products like Land O'Lakes and Silk. Oh, the soy milk.
Yeah, you drink that.
I do. Has struggled as much as any other large public company this year. The cost of raw milk, butter fat, soybeans, and sugar have risen sharply. Dean Foods has also been crippled by debt. The firm's shares were down as much as 60% at one point during the last 12 months. Despite all the bad news, hedge fund investors David Tepper bought a 7.3% stake in the company. Dean Foods shares rose 9% after the announcement. Dean has already sold its yogurt business to Schreiber Foods, and Tepper, who is one of the cleverest investors on Wall Street, has probably bet the balance of Dean Foods will be sold off in parts. Watch for Dean to be broken up to satisfy debt holders and large investors. Oh, isn't that great? Another company that may not be around by the end of 2011 is Frontier Airlines. The carrier is owned by Republic Airways Holdings and was bankrupt when Republic bought it in 2009. Republic recently merged another of its holdings, Midwest Air, into Frontier. Denver-based Frontier is simply too small to compete in the domestic carrier market, which has become increasingly dominated by large airlines that are growing due to mergers. So Wall Street has also become increasingly worried about Republic's future. Its shares are down 13%. While shares in rival JetBlue are up 9% during the same time frame. Frontier's Milwaukee hub, which serves the east of the Midwest, and its Denver hub, which serves the west, the south and Mexico, would be valuable to a larger carrier. So, Frontier Airline. Anybody ever fly Frontier Airline?
I didn't.
I've never flown Frontier Airline. I didn't even think Frontier Airline. I'd heard of Frontier Airline. I didn't even know that they were around anymore. What an unfortunate name for an airline, too. Frontier, man. Sounds like they got nothing but covered wagons instead of airplanes. Number five, here's one that's going to really break your heart, Robert. Sara Lee.
No kidding.
Yep. Sara Lee's done, man. By the end of 2012, Sara Lee will be no more. You know, the coffee cake? Well, they also make ballpark hot dogs, and Jimmy Dean Breakfast Foods is already being circled by corporations and similar businesses and by private equity firms, groups interested in breaking Sara Lee up. So Sara Lee owns Jimmy Dean, huh?
So Jimmy Dean, he made off like a bandit. He sold his wiener company.
Boy, man, you could make any simple sentence sound obscene.
Yeah, I know. But I say, wiener. Well, I didn't mean to do it.
Well, you're all like, so Jimmy Dean, he sold off his wiener company. You mean his sausage company?
Well, yeah, but did he make wieners too?
I don't know if he made wieners. You mean hot dogs? Anyway, so media reports say Sara Lee's in the midst of a plan to separate its coffee and meat businesses. Anyway, if that happens, if that happens, the new companies may be named Hillshire Farm and Pickwick Tea. Who cares? I never liked Sara Lee anyway. I don't like the idea of someone telling me it's an old lady making coffee cake, and I turn around and it's some big steaming mill on the outskirts of Akron. Nothing wrong with Akron, but it's just, tell me, you know, Akron Meats. Who makes this delicious coffee cake? A company called Youngstown Pork Slaughter. Now, do you want to have some?
Sure.
Oh, so you just want the honesty. Yeah, that's all I'm asking for. Youngstown Pork Slaughter Coffee Cake. Yeah, it's fine with me. Just be perfectly honest.
I wouldn't eat it, man, if that's what it's called. Why would you want to do that?
What difference does it make, man? What do you think, they're making a coffee cake in the same place where they're slaughtering pork?
They may be.
Oh, get out of here. You guys get sold on this stuff. I don't like it. Who was the other one?
What do you mean the other one?
Who's the old, was that a Mrs. Culberson or something? They always got some woman, and you always put your faith in the woman. You think she exists. You think she's cool, and she doesn't exist at all. It's just some guy in an apron with a big meat mallet, and he's standing out there in a swirling snow in Youngstown, Ohio, and it's called Youngstown Pork Death. And by the way, have our coffee cake. All right, anyway, Borders. The large bookstore chain is almost gone. So Borders, as you know, is well, maybe you didn't know, but Borders was always one of the weaker of the national book chains, and they are almost gone entirely. The only question remaining is whether it will be dissolved or sold to Barnes & Noble. It appears Borders has little choice other than to go bankrupt, given its debt and cash flow situation. Two ominous signs for the bookseller. It says it's unable to pay some of its largest publishers for their books. Borders stock has dropped under $1 a share, a warning sign that the shares could eventually be delisted. That is, if Borders lasts long enough. The company's 500 locations may have value to a buyer, but its name does not, being associated with little more than failure. And the very first super bookstore that I ever went into that sold coffee was Borders down in Miami.
Did you like it?
I thought it was the greatest thing I'd ever seen. It was the very first big bookstore with the coffee and all of the stuff. And that's where we had our signings, WIOD. We had our CD signings. And I thought Borders was fantastic. They became my favorite bookstore to go to, and I had no idea they were so badly run because they really had my business for a long time. We've got a couple more, but we also have some other news that we want to get to here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, so we'll do that. We'll take a break. Ricky Gervais has said he's not going to host the Golden Globes because he's sick and tired of all these sissies and these crybabies that we got out here with the, you know, you're really mean to us and everything. And a man who counsels troubled teens by doing something that causes the teens to call 911. Are you ready for that? He counsels troubled teens, and they turn around and call 911. Let's find out what it is when we come back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
And welcome back here. Our number is 877-876-PHIL and our website, philhendryshow.com. And we were just talking. I was talking to Rance, you know. It's hard. We're looking at these companies that are not going to be around by the year 2011, by the end of the year 2011, the year that we're in right now. We have one more company we didn't mention, and that's Gateway. And I was saying to him, you remember Gateway Computers? That was about 13, 14 years ago. And I dare say that's one of the reasons, Gateway is one of the reasons why there are a lot of people with computers. They made it very easy to buy a computer. They said, here, just buy it here. We send you the monitor, this, that, buy our Gateway, boom. And then they had the little stores. But what Gateway didn't do is they did not stay ahead of the curve in terms of equipment, in terms of the actual hardware. There were other computers that were better, Dell, Hewlett-Packard. And they were bought by a Taiwan company, PC giant Acer, in 2007. But they're number three in the world behind Dell and Hewlett-Packard. The buyout was not unlike the one that China-based Lenovo made of the IBM PC division. Lenovo found the IBM brand was useful for marketing in the United States, but dropped the name in favor of its own. Lenovo saw no reason to support two brands any longer and wanted to be recognized by its corporate name in the U.S. market. So IBM, the long-standing Big Blue, the big name in American business machines, business equipment and computers, IBM, as far as the PC division goes, no more. And now Gateway going away. Acer, meanwhile, has become an established brand in the U.S. over the last 2 years, particularly for its netbooks and notebooks, while the Gateway brand has faded. Gateway is still a standalone corporation, but will likely disappear this year. And we were talking about, you know, what does it take? You always have to be thinking about what it is you have to do. What is being promoted by your competitors? What's being promoted technologically? Do you want to do that? Do you need to do that? Like in the website business, is it necessary to get an app? For like my website, philhenryshow.com, people ask me this all the time. Why don't you have an app? I'll tell you why. Number one, they change all the time. I have to have an app for this phone, have an app for that phone. Our goal is to make our website mobile. No matter what device you have, you go to our website and you have a mobile website. That's the goal, and that's what we plan on doing. And you gotta think about these things. So I don't know what I'm talking about this or anything.
Yeah, what are you talking about? Like you're some kind of a big operator or something?
No, I don't think I'm a big operator. I'm just telling people what we do.
Yeah, we'll get to another story.
Oh, shut up. These guys probably don't think I pay them enough, which I don't. All right, so we've got the kookiest thing going here, man, with this story. Attorney accused of indecency while counseling troubled teens at a Christian outreach center. Claimed that exposing himself was part of a mentoring program. Are you ready for that? That's exactly right. In Norton, Ohio, a Norton attorney who founded a coffee house that caters to troubled teens faces charges that he exposed himself to two 19-year-old men last Friday. The cafe bills itself as a Christian outreach center for at-risk teens. Norton police say they were called to Cafe 4111 near Norton High School after the two men called dispatchers to complain that Thomas Walkley took off his pants while counseling them. And we have the 911 calls to prove it. 19-year-old Xavier Zwornowski called 911 to report what happened at the Christian Outreach Center coffee house.
911, where's your emergency?
We're at Cafe 4111, and we walked in to get community service, and this guy came down and asked us, he's like, we went upstairs with him, and we were talking about it, and then he just pulled his pants down in front of us, and I don't know what to do, so I called the cop. He's standing right here by the car with us. I don't know what's going on.
Okay, the operator tries to figure out exactly what happened.
And he pulled his pants down?
Yeah, we were upstairs in his, like, office thing, and he's pulled his pants out in front of us.
Okay. Where is he now?
He's right next to me. Do you want to talk to him? I don't know what to do.
Okay, yeah.
All right, now Thomas Walkley talks to the operator, a bizarre conversation in which he admits to pulling down his pants.
Hi, this is Attorney Tom Walkley. Who am I speaking with?
This is dispatch. What exactly is going on?
Oh, we have a couple guys here. They're coming over for community service. Is this in Norton?
Yeah.
Who is this?
This is Kristen.
Hi, Kristen. How are you doing today?
Good.
Do you have anybody that can come over?
Well, yeah, but I'm just trying to figure out what's going on.
Oh, it's just there's nothing going on. They came over for community service. And I was explaining to them what the program is and so forth.
So nobody pulled their pants down?
I didn't say that. But these guys are over the age of 18, and they were being. We have something going on with our part of our program, and if you want to send one of the officers over, we can talk to them about what that is.
Well, anyway, Norton police say they were called to Cafe 4111 near Norton High School. Walkley said Monday that exposing himself, quote, is part of a mentoring program he's developed to help in his work to assist at-risk boys. He called educational and not sexual. Walkley described his role at Cafe 4111 as that of a father figure and mentor. He said he has used exposure in mentoring sessions in the past. Radical times call for radical measures. We're not afraid to do what it takes, even pulling our underwear down. Thank you. We'll be back here in a world-famous Phil Henry show. You know, there's an old saying, don't bullcrap a bullcrapper there, Attorney Walkley. We'll be back.
Phil Henry. To the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
And welcome back tonight here on the Phil Henry Show. We got Bud and Robert and another whack night tonight. How'd you like Dave Oliva, huh?
I don't know about Dave Oliva. He sounds like he's dedicated and everything, but then he's saying he's going to... I don't know.
Well, Dave thinks that tasering everybody in sight...
Well, he's talking about those big Samoans.
Yeah, he thinks tasering everybody in sight is the way to do it. And, of course, we had in our first hour, who was that, Dr. Leo Rittenour, the guy that enjoys taking teeth out of people's heads and really likes doing it. It just so happens it's legal now because of the stem cell research. That guy needs help.
I don't know. You know, it's funny. I want to know what he's done. Maybe do some work for me.
You want him as your dentist.
Why would you want him?
He does sound like he's probably works cheap.
Yeah, I'll bet he works cheap, man. I'll bet he works real cheap. If he could talk him into taking all of your teeth out of your head, I bet you he'd work for free.
Well, I don't want to lose all of them.
Well, you know, beggars can't be choosers. So getting back to this lawyer, and then we're going to be talking here at some length about Ricky Gervais. Not a long thing, but the story doesn't go away. He has now said he's not going to do the show again. And this story about how conservatives are rallying to his cause is a little confusing. I'm not sure it's conservative so much. It's just maybe it's some of them are conservatives. I think what it is there's just people who like a refreshing take on Hollywood, and that's about as in-your-face as you can get, man. If you're standing there as the host of an award show, and you're giving out awards, and you say, but you know him better from L.A. County Jail and the Betty Ford Clinic, here's Robert Downey Jr., I mean, first of all, it's honest. It may not be appropriate, but then at this particular point, what's appropriate when you hire the guy to host your show? All right, now, finishing up here, the attorney that was used to, and I have to tell the studio back in Medford, I've got a echo in my ears that has got to get fixed. Man, I'm sorry, but it's happening in the cans, and it's been happening all night. You have this attorney who was apparently, this guy has got some mentoring program, and he tells the kids, come on upstairs, I want to talk to you. All they want to do is get a job. And they sit down and they talk for a while, and the next thing you know, he takes his pants off. And he says that all he's doing is engaging in a kind of educational process where you have to sort of think differently and this and that. And anyway, he got arrested, and he pled not guilty, and he was arrested, by the way, for indecent exposure, not for sexual harassment. And some guys, I guess they figure, you know, you can sell anything to anybody if you got just you give them enough time to bullcrap enough. But that's about as big a story as I've ever heard in my life. Well, you know, boys, now I'm going to do something that I... Well, what are you going to do? I'm just going to do something, and I'm hoping that this will help you understand. I want to shake your thinking up. You guys want to do that with me? Just shake your thinking up? Well, sure, sir. Okay, all right. No, just trust me. Go with me on this. Go with me on this. He stands up and pulls his pants down.
That's very heavy.
Heavy?
What's heavy about it, man?
I'd like to just try something different. And he strips off his pants? So what's different about that? Freaking weird ass. So anyway, he got arrested, and he pled not guilty. I just think it's just one more chapter in the many, many, many ways that some weirdos operate in this world. All right, getting back to Ricky Gervais. The British comedian is the new darling of political conservatives thanks to the fusillade of insults he directed at the aghast celebrities attending this weekend's Golden Globe Awards. Now, they were very funny. We played some of them for you. And they were fantastic. You know, the whole thing with what's-his-ass Robert Downey Jr. and the Tim Allen line. I mean, it was funny stuff. And I know that it was probably considered to be insulting by some of the people there. But here's the thing about this Ricky Gervais situation. This guy, Philip Burke, is the president of the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, said the following thing. He said the comments were totally unacceptable. He said it's not the kind of thing that we like, but that's Ricky, he said. That's Ricky. That's why we hired him. So in other words, if you say that what you just did there was completely unacceptable, but that is you, and that's why we hired you, you're not saying anything at all. You're just making noise. In other words, there's a thing called sense, and then there's a thing called nonsense, and you've just engaged in the latter. So if they ask you for a comment, and you give them a comment saying that he was merciless, he was in bad form, it was totally unacceptable, and so on and so forth, but then you say that's Ricky, that's what you expect from a guy like that, then you haven't said anything other than you hired him to do exactly what he did, and now you find out the reaction is not all that positive from some, not all, but some of the people, and now you're backpedaling. Now, you think that the guy stiffed. He didn't. It was fantastic. You had more people watching that show than ever before. And I'll tell you something right now. I wouldn't have watched it had it not been for him. I couldn't give a damn about the Golden Globes, man. It might as well be the Blue Ribbon Awards at the L.A. County Fair, for all I care. They could be sticking a blue ribbon on the prize-winning sow. But if Ricky Gervais was hosting it...
You'd watch that?
I would. I'd watch it, yes. In fact, if I were the people running the L.A. County Fair next year when you're giving out that blue ribbon to the guinea pig, have Ricky do it.
Yeah, right.
Well... In any event, the right-leaning Daily Mail in London said that bravo, Ricky, a risque act on self-loving Tinseltown. It was a beautiful thing. Hollywood and its power brokers hate a rebel. It's a place of groupthink, and it's almost terminal political correctness. So he earned himself a cult following among a great many people, whether they're conservatives or not. I think that's a chicken way of saying it. Conservative, just a lot of people that ordinarily wouldn't be watching an award show, or maybe people, whether they're liberal or conservative, who think it's funny to hear some people have the air let out of them a little bit. Big wow. In any event, after all of that was said and done, he said that he is not interested in hosting the Golden Globes ever again, as long as... No, he didn't say ever again, but he said he's not interested in doing it again. Next year, a TMZ paparazzi caught up with Gervais in New York City, asking him if he'll be invited back to host the Golden Globes.
Well, it doesn't really matter, cause I'm not going to do it again anyway. I said I wouldn't do it a second time, but... I think twice to now.
Did you enjoy yourself?
I loved it more than last year, actually.
And all the other comedians seem to have thought it was absolutely hilarious. It only seems that the kind of stars who got poked fun, I don't see that.
Well, it's nice to be loved by your peers. Stick by you.
If you thought Gervais was inappropriate Sunday night, you'll be glad that he cut out one particular joke from his monologue. On Conan last night, last week, Gervais explained a bit he wasn't allowed to do during the awards ceremony.
The opening, you know, they go, Ricky, please welcome Ricky Gervais. And I was going to come out dressed as Adolf Hitler.
Uh-huh.
Right? No, wait, right? And I was going to come out, and I was just doing that, waving to them, right? And then get to the podium and let it die down and go, too much? Right? And then I wanted to look in the crowd and go, it's the wrong crowd, it's just the wrong crowd. And then I was going to say, that's the last time I borrow a suit from Mel Gibson.
All right, so once she heard Ricky Gervais' scathing jokes at the Golden Globes, Jennifer Lopez confronted him before she went on as a presenter. She talked to Access Hollywood Live with Billy Bush and Kid Hoover, whatever, but here is what she said.
Then when I go backstage to present, I'm backstage with Alec, we're about to walk out, and Ricky shows up, and I said, listen... I will kill you. Do you understand? I am from New York. My husband fights. We fight. We both fight. We will beat you up after the show with a couple of, you know, bleep bleeps in there.
And he took
the
warning.
He was kind to you. He's like, oh, don't worry. It's going to be fine.
He took a light shot at you, right?
He did. He's like, it's funny. It's funny. I said, let me see your card.
I swear.
I mean it, Ricky. I'm not playing with you. And he's like, oh, you're going to love it. It was funny.
He said it's Jenny on the block if the block is Rodeo Drive. I think it was something like that. Anyway, Lopez is asked if Gervais went too far with some of his jokes.
No.
You're okay with it all?
You know, look, I've been the butt of jokes. Literally for so long. You know, it's kind of like when you're out there.
Your butt's been a joke.
You got to kind of expect that. You know, everybody doesn't get to be, you know, kind of untouched always. You know, they're going to poke fun at you. It is what it is. You know, we like to keep it above the belt. He may have hit one or two below the belt.
Anyway, he was funnier than hell, and that's where that's at. And I hate to think that the guy is leaving. Thinking that people didn't enjoy it, because they did. And I think he got, you're in that bubble and people are telling you, you suck, you suck, you suck, you suck. Why? Because Robert Downey Jr. didn't like you. I hope somebody told him, no, people dug it. You know, like I said, I wouldn't have watched it. What'd you guys think?
Yeah, I thought it was funny as hell, man. I wish I would have heard that Hitler joke.
Yeah, how come he didn't do that?
The Hitler joke? Are you kidding?
Yeah.
No way. No way.
Why not?
Because that's no way. No. Hitler? Mel Gibson? No. No. All right, your cell phone could mess with a plane. Did you know this? If you're flying back to London or New York or wherever the hell it is you're going after you went to the Golden Globes and got your ass kicked by Ricky Gervais, and then you pull out your cell phone. Let's say you're Arianna Huffington, and you're sitting there, and you've got so many important people to call, and you've got such an important life to live, and you're going to dial around, and you're going to be a pain in the ass to a million people, and you're sitting on an airplane. And one of the people looks at you and says, didn't you hear what the flight attendant said? She said to turn off your cell phone. And you go, no, I don't do that for anyone. You know, and you lay some of that stuff on him. And the next thing you know, you're in a free-swinging fist fight there in first class. Because guess what? Your cell phone could mess with the electronics of the aircraft. And at least one incident that we're going to tell you about here, they believe it had the possibility that it did something to the electronics of the aircraft. It was actually the pilot that had his cell phone on when all of a sudden a plane that was landing in New Zealand in 2003, 8 people died. The plane flew into the ground short of the runway because the pilot had called home. The call remained connected for the last 3 minutes of the flight. And in the final report, the New Zealand Transport Accident Investigation Commission noted the pilot's own cell phone might have caused erroneous indications on a navigational aid. Now, is it likely? Probably not. Does it happen? They don't know. Can it? Absolutely, yes, it can. It's a good news, bad news thing. It's bad, says David Carson, an engineer with Boeing, if people assume it can never happen. Many of these devices, your cell phone, your little GPS unit, your tablet, your whatever you got, many of these devices transmit a signal, and all of them emit electromagnetic waves, which in theory can interfere with the plane's electronics. At the same time, older planes may not have the best shielding against the latest generation of these devices, according to some engineers. Is it worrisome, said Bill Strauss, who's an engineer studying passenger use of electronic devices? It is. Now, since 2000, there have been at least 10 voluntary reports filed by pilots in the United States with the Aviation Safety Reporting System administered by NASA. In 2007, one pilot recounted an instance when the navigational equipment on his Boeing 737 had failed after takeoff. A flight attendant told a passenger to turn off a handheld GPS device, and the problem on the flight deck went away.
Wow. So that, what if they crashed?
I don't know if they were going to crash. It says here that his navigational equipment, he had a problem with it right after takeoff. Now, I don't know how critical it is after takeoff, but I guess it is critical. If you've got, after takeoff, you've got different...
There's a lot of airplanes that are taking off right along with you.
Yeah, so there's different... There's traffic, as they say in the business. The Federal Aviation Administration says there are risks associated with electromagnetic interference and prohibits the use of electronics below 10,000 feet, as you well know. That's why they tell you, please turn off your electronic devices, because we're beginning our initial descent into Busted Whistle, Arkansas International Airport. So please turn that crap off. It is up to each airline to set policy at higher altitudes as to when you can turn it on. There's not enough evidence to warrant a change. However, there are many reasons that passengers do not comply with restrictions. Devices blur the distinction. PDAs that are cell phones that play music. In the mind of the nominal consumer, it is hard to know what devices are actually doing something that can affect the electronics of the plane. But let's just make this perfectly clear. If it's something that is giving you access to the outside world, like the internet, like a telephone conversation, it's probably something you ought to turn off.
Yeah, but a lot of people get confused.
A lot of people are, you know, I'm really, pardon me for being cynical, a lot of people are just dumb. You know, I'm sorry. The dumbest asses, man. Some people, if they just use your common damn sense. All right. Some passengers are like Nicole Rodriguez of Los Angeles, who acknowledges she listens to music on her cell phone when she's not supposed to. In my head, I imagine it's not being a problem. The whole airplane is filled with electronics that are constantly on. Is my little cell phone going to make that big of a difference? She said, as the plane plummeted nose first into the ocean, exploding into a ball of fire that could be seen 6 miles off. No. Even flight attendants charged with enforcing the rules can fail to recognize the potential for problems. Dinkar Mokandam, who is the occupational safety specialist with the blah, blah, blah something. I don't believe it is general knowledge that someone could plug in an iPod and potentially harm the aircraft, even among the flight attendants and pilot community, said Mr. Mokandam. But it can happen. All right. Do you want to go from a man to a woman? Well, the city of Berkeley is your place. You can get a job with the city. They'll pay for it. That's right. It's part of city insurance. We'll talk about that when we come back and more here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com.
This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Phil Henry.
Hey, right after the show, go to our website and check out our show log, and we'll tell you exactly if you missed what went on the show. It's there. And then download the show tomorrow. It's a podcast. You can download it at iTunes or directly from our website with your backstage pass. So you got the show log right there. You got the show that's downloading into your iPod, and you're all set to go. And, of course, our video cast is on demand for 5 days. As well as Saturday, so our local Los Angeles video cast on KFI, which is not nationally broadcast, but you can take a look at our video cast from our Saturday night show as well there on our website. Robert, I called you Bob. Do you mind?
Well, it's kind of a white thing.
It is very white, but anyway, Robert asked me, when we were flying to the Caribbean last spring, how did I get all those pictures up on the website? We did that by way of their internet provider on Delta Airlines, okay?
Yeah, you did that when they said it was okay.
Yeah, yeah. Robert's not asking me, you know.
No, I'm not asking that you do it again. I just wondered how you did that.
They have a little internet provider. They got a wireless service up there that you pay for. So I had to get my little credit card out. But once we got on the wireless connection, then if you're on our website, I don't know how far back you have to go. You got to go back to May. You'll see photographs that we sent from the aircraft, you know?
Yeah, I remember when you did that one. There's a picture of you having a drink and everything.
Yeah, there's a picture of me having a drink. I think I took a picture of the in-flight movie that we were watching. And it was right in the middle of the night, I'll never forget, as we were winging our way across the country. So we really kept everybody updated on the website as to where we were. And then when we got to Barbados, we continued to send pictures. I mean, it's just amazing, man. We updated the website from St. Vincent and the Grenadines using an iPhone. And then using a little flip cam, we sent video every day back to our website of what we were doing. So we had a subscription-based video that people would see as we were just walking around the Grenadines, sailing, you know, hanging out in the restaurant, going over to Union Island, all kinds of stuff. So it was a lot of fun. It's amazing what you can do in the air, so long as the pilot says it's okay to use the equipment.
Exactly.
All right. Finally, as a perfect segue from that, would you like to have a sex change operation? Well, sure you would. While other cities are slashing employee benefits, if you'll pardon the term slash, Berkeley is slated to add more, paying for sex change operations. The city council is poised to vote this week to set aside $20,000 annually for city workers' gender reassignment surgery. Well, $20,000, that ain't going to buy you a lip lift, man.
What are we talking about?
$20,000, what is that? Anyway, the procedure is not covered by the city's two health insurance providers, Kaiser and HealthNet. We offer all kinds of benefits to our employees. This brings our benefits in line with what's just and fair for the transgender community, said City Councilman Daryl Moore, who originally proposed the idea in 2007 when he himself considered becoming a chick and then changed his mind when he realized that there wasn't enough money in the fund, and he sure as hell wasn't going to spring for it. The benefit would allow employees to collect the money before the operation. To receive the payout, employees would have to have lived as the opposite sex for at least 1 year and undergone hormone therapy and a whole bunch of jazz like that. So what makes you guys in Berkeley think that someone that you're hiring tomorrow to become, say, your new city engineer didn't just sign on to get the sex change operation, and as soon as he, she, it got it, they are gone with the wind, man?
Yeah, I would do that.
Gone. Where are you going? Oh, I quit, man. I quit. I'm going back to L.A. Kidding. World-famous Phil Henry Show, produced by Jason Rantz. Our technical director is Rick Johnson, and our technical and associate producer, Dan Northcraft. Great job, all of you guys. Great, great job. The world-famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com.
Phil Henry.